hiker dies in an apparent fall in Glacier National Park. Good evening, I'm Courtney Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Jovetich, and that's our top story tonight on Montana Evening Edition.
Flathead reporter Katrin Fry takes us to the International Native Games Conference on the Flathead Reservation. Capitol reporter Dan Boyce tells us why Montana's oil and coal industries oppose President Obama's plans to fight climate change. And in our feature interview, News Director Sally Mock gets Senator John Tester's take on the president's climate change proposals. A Washington State man who was hiking alone on a closed trail in Glacier National Park has died after an apparent fall. Park spokeswoman Denise German says a 64-year-old man likely slipped on snow still covering the Highline Trail, about a mile west of Logan Pass. The trail has not opened for the summer because of the snow danger. Park dispatchers received a call from a ranger requesting emergency assistance at about 3:40 yesterday. The ranger administered CPR and used a defibrillator with the help of bystanders, but they were unable to resuscitate the man. He died at the scene. The man's body was transferred to the Flathead County coroner. The man's name was being withheld while family members could be notified. The fall is still being investigated.
And in other news from around the state, representatives from Montana's coal and petroleum industries are blasting a new climate action plan announced by President Obama this week. The plan aims to reduce national carbon dioxide emissions, and a big piece of that will come through reining in coal-fired power plants. Capitol reporter Dan Boyce tells us fossil fuel companies say this and other pieces of the proposal will lead to higher prices for consumers.
President Obama, in his new climate plan, is directing the Environmental Protection Agency to create the first ever federal limits on power plant emissions. He wants to increase America's reliance on natural gas and renewables. He wants to make trucks, homes, and businesses more fuel and energy efficient. The Montana Coal Council represents the state's six major coal mines. Executive Director Bud Clinch says he really doesn't see anything too surprising in the Obama plan. He says the industry has been waiting on most of these announcements for about the last 2 years.
I think it's something that he's believed in from the beginning. It's just that the election is behind us now, and any risk, political risk to him, is somewhat gone.
The new standards set by the Obama plan will make it very difficult for any new coal-fired power plants to be built nationwide. Clinch says it's still unclear what exactly the rules will mean for existing coal plants. Montana Petroleum Association Executive Director Dave Galt says the state's coal production helps keep electric bills down. Galt doesn't really have anything good to say about the Obama plan.
If it raises the price of electricity in his new plans, then it's going to raise the cost of producing oil in Montana, and it's going to raise the cost of producing and making gasoline and diesel fuel in Montana, and it's going to be passed on to every consumer in the state. And I don't think people really realize that.
He especially faults Obama's new directive on the Keystone XL oil pipeline. The company behind Keystone, TransCanada, is seeking federal permission to cross the line from Canada into Montana and run it down to the Gulf of Mexico. Obama says the pipeline will only be approved if it does not increase greenhouse gases.
It's totally ridiculous. He's just looking for an out to accommodate his environmental friends.
Galt says those working on the Keystone project have done everything possible to minimize environmental impacts. And when it comes to those impacts, especially the impact of human-generated carbon emissions, Galt is still not convinced it's a problem.
Human-caused climate change. I do believe that the jury's still out on that. Is the climate changing? I don't think there's any dispute about that. I don't think anybody disagrees with that. But is it our fault as humans? I do have an issue with that.
It's important to note, scientific research is nearly unanimous that humans are significantly contributing to climate change. Bud Clinch, with the Montana Coal Council, he does not outright dismiss carbon emissions as a problem, but he does not want to see tough new restrictions put on coal. Rather, he wishes the Obama administration would put more money into research and development of clean coal technologies to find out a way to keep using a resource that the nation, especially Montana, still has in abundance.
The bigger issue is that we talk about carbon capture system and CO2 in the atmosphere, and that while we could maybe make some incremental improvements by shutting down these coal-fired power plants that he's talking about, in a world global perspective, it's going to have absolutely no impact whatsoever.
Developing countries like China continue to build coal-fired power plants at a rapid pace. Clinch says reducing the demand for coal here domestically will only encourage coal producers to more aggressively pursue exporting their product overseas. I'm Dan Boyce reporting at the Capitol.
We'll have Senator John Tester's take on the president's climate change plan later on in this broadcast.
President Barack Obama said few things define the cornerstone of the American dream more than owning a home. Today, 10 more Missoula families can not only call themselves homeowners, but home builders as well. Reporter Ruth Eddy has more.
This, my son, from the very first time he saw the floor plans, had this for his bedroom in his mind.
But this is my daughter's room. We still haven't put the bifold doors on yet.
Yes, Christy Milburn will be putting up the bifold doors in her home, but Milburn isn't just helping with the finishing touches. Her and 9 other families have been building their homes from the ground up. The program was funded in large part by the USDA Rural Development Office.
But the homes, the work in the homes, were actually, a majority of it was done by the people that own the homes today.
State Director for Rural Development, Tony Preeti, says mutual self-help programs like this have been in Great Falls, Bozeman, Hardin, Butte, and now Missoula. The program offers low-income families a unique path to home ownership.
So this is an actual 4-bedroom, but since each of my kids are grown, then I chose to turn my fourth bedroom over to an actual 4-wall dining room.
Kelly Hansen on Lot 5 painted her house a cheery yellow. Along with design control, another homeowner, Daniel Bachman, says that building her own home came with some unexpected benefits.
For my husband and I, has taught us, you know, a lot about being a couple. You know, it's benefited us more and more with the one. It's brought us closer together. It is really the best thing that's ever happened to us, really.
The houses aren't quite ready to live in, that beeping being
the batteries dying and the smoke detectors.
Families are expected to put in 30 hours of work a week. With everyone working on everyone else's homes, there are bound to be some conflicts. But Jenny Brown, who owns Lot 8, says it's just important to keep the big picture in mind.
Big picture at the end is having the house that you built on top of building your own community and meeting all the people that you're going to be living with.
For Lot 1 owner Christy Milburn, who was homeless and lived in 20 different places in a year, she's thankful to finally have a home to call her own.
In all my homelessness, I would be at the park or had a stroller going down the street with my kids, and I would see families in their homes with their stability and their security, you know, going to their jobs, playing with their kids, and I would want that. And not know how to get there. And now I'm that family in the window.
The families are expecting to move in late July. And in early August, another 10 families begin building another 10 homes. For Montana Evening Edition, I'm Ruth Eddy.
The high-pressure system settling in over the West is expected to bring very warm temperatures to most of the state, raising concerns of heat-related injuries and even death. The American Red Cross of Montana notes that excessive heat has caused more deaths across the country in recent years than all other weather events. The organization is offering some advice to help us stay safe when the temperatures start to take off. Communications Director Anna Fernandez-Gevart says Montanans know how to cope with the cold, but sometimes aren't as aware of the dangers presented by extreme heat. One of her first tips, don't forget how hot a car can get in just a short amount of time.
And so it's very important not to leave children or pets unattended in a car, because in a matter of minutes, it could be life-threatening to them. So that's the most important thing probably to remember over the course of the summer.
We'll have more with Fernandez-Gevart on tomorrow's Montana Evening Edition.
The importance of play, traditional games, and neuroscience come together in the first International Native Games Conference in Pablo this week. The Browning-based International Traditional Games Society put together the conference as a way to highlight research on the value of traditional games to tribal culture. Flathead reporter Katrin Fry has more on the role these traditional games play in healing the past.
Hannah Hazeagle of Lodgepole on the Fort Belknap Reservation uses a sewing machine against the backdrop of construction noise on the Salish and Kootenai College in Pablo to make a kickball.
You put it on the ground with how many ever kids you have, and you just kick it to a distance. You have a marker on the other side, and you kick it down there, and you turn around and you kick it back to where you started from.
Has Eagle says you can have multiple children per team, and whichever team kicks it over and back first wins. She says you can use a hacky sack and sew on a long tail, or you can make it from whatever fabric you have around, fill it with sand and buffalo hair, or beans, or rice if that's what you have around. Has Eagle is in Pablo as part of the first Traditional Native Games Conference and Games, organized by the Browning-based International Traditional Games Society. Executive Director Craig Falcon says the organization started in 1997.
Oh, the spark came from middle school kids. And they asked their teacher, what kind of games did we play back in the day? And the teacher had no idea.
Falcon says the students went to religious leaders in the community who connected them with other groups and cultural organizations.
And then it just kind of blossomed from there. The Blackfeet games came first from our traditional societies. There's children's societies. There's adult societies. And each of them had different games.
From there, Falcon says they started talking to college presidents. And the college presidents talked to other college presidents and their cultural directors from different tribes. And it kept growing, with more games coming in. He says now they have about 120 different games from different tribes. Falcon says this focus on games has a deeper cultural significance.
If you just hear it, you think of games, basketball, football, tennis, whatever, just a game. But if you look at the culture behind the game, these games were used as life skills tools, conflict resolution tools, healing tools.
Falcon says many of the games are spiritual and they can heal families and trauma. He says research being conducted by neuroscientists is proving this connection.
That's the concept that we want to share with youth and adults, because there has been a breakdown in cultural identity since the reservation period started. The mission schools and boarding schools pretty much stripped all those things from families on how to be healthy families. So what the games brings back is the family values, the cultural values, the values for the land, the values for yourself, self-respect and community respect.
I don't know, these, everybody keeps making them different, so. See, this guy must have been taller than me.
Hannah Hazeagle takes a smooth stick from a willow out of a barrel of dozens of such sticks. She holds it up to her leg, and it reaches higher than her hip. These sticks are used for double ball, which she describes as another family game. Teams will use the stick to pick up, pass, and throw onto different parts of a goalpost a small, dumbbell-shaped bag. Other games involve memory, dexterity, math, and yelling.
And they're also running scream sticks. You take off running with your stick like that and take a deep breath and run as far as you could, but you gotta scream loud and... And it's wherever you take your next breath, that's where you stop.
Falcon says it's all about creating healthy bodies and healthy minds.
The game part brings in the healthy body part, but the healthy mind and heart and soul comes from the concepts of what the games teach, their origins.
Falcon says they hope to keep growing and strengthening these cultural connections. Katrin Fryett reporting from the Flathead.
Montana's Senator John Tester was quick to praise President Obama's recent speech on climate change, where the president outlined actions he intends to take to address it. In a statement, Tester said as a farmer, he's seen firsthand the effects of climate change, and he's glad the president is kicking off the discussion. But the devil's in the details, and as Capitol reporter Dan Boyce reported earlier, many of the president's proposals are controversial, especially for the fossil fuel energy industry. In this feature interview, Senator Tester talks with News Director Sally Mock about some of those details and how they might impact Montana.
Ultimately, a state like Montana has incredible opportunity in energy, all sorts of energy. You know, we talk about our traditional fuels, and we need to have responsible development of those. But we've also got incredible opportunity in renewables. And I just think when you talk about potential job creation in the state of Montana, depending what the president's plan comes out with down the road, And that's what we've got to monitor. We've got to make sure it's going to be something that works. But I think we can have both. I think we can have both diminish some of the effects that are happening with a changing climate, and we can have job creation and more energy security as we go forward. So, you know, the devil's always in the details, Sally. But the bottom line is, I wished the Congress would have taken this issue up. I think it would have been entirely appropriate for Congress to have a good debate on the floor, but we're incapable of doing that at this point in time. And so the president putting forth some options as it deals with extreme floods and droughts and wildfires, definitely an issue that we need to be talking about and looking for solutions.
One of the devilish details is the president's intention to put the first ever federal limits on carbon dioxide emissions from existing power plants, which the coal industry says likely prohibits any new coal-fired plants being built, and that could impact Montana's coal plants. What do you think of that?
Well, we've got to make sure that whatever comes down does two things. Not only make sure that our air and water is as clean as it can be, because there's a lot of jobs associated with our outdoor industry and hunting and fishing and that, and there's a lot of jobs affiliated with agriculture that climate has an impact on. But we also need to have affordable energy. I've said many times that as we move forth in this century, the country that has energy that's affordable is going to have a tremendous advantage. Now, we have seen tremendous advances made in the Bakken, and we've seen advances made in renewable energy too. When these proposals come down from the EPA, it's going to be very important for all of us in Congress to take a look at the proposals, to make sure that they don't put a death nail in the economy, to make sure that they really do promote business and promote jobs in the state, and to make sure that they actually do something to help move us away from floods and wildfires and all those kind of things. So once again, you know, as this all unfolds, as folks that serve in the Senate and the House, we need to continue to monitor to make sure that this is going to work and actually do what it's supposed to do. If we shut every coal plant down in the country today, if we just shut the ones down in Montana, our energy prices would go through the roof and it wouldn't be practical. We don't have other options right now. So that's why I hope the president puts some serious money into research and development so it gives us options. I tell folks, you know, when I get up in the morning and fill my tractor up with fuel, you know, it's a couple hundred gallons of diesel fuel, and I don't have any options. I really don't. I mean, there's some advanced biofuels out there, but we haven't done the research on them to make them, to be able to commercialize them so that I can use them. That research needs to be done so that we have options out there that will not only allow us to have affordable fuels, whether it's coal-fired plants or whether it's wind energy or whatever it might be, or biofuels, and still be able to drive our economy, but yet be able to have an affordable energy source.
Senator, I want to read a statistic that the White House put out about carbon emissions in Montana. And according to the White House, they say, quote, in 2011, power plants and major industrial facilities in Montana emitted nearly 22 million metric tons of carbon pollution. That's equal to the yearly pollution from more than 4.5 million cars. The argument would be that that is a kind of carbon pollution that needs to be stemmed.
Well, you've got to look at who we are and where we are. We are an energy-producing state that exports a lot of electricity, and much of that energy is produced with coal because we have one of the biggest coal reserves in the country. My point is that we need to burn coal as clean as we possibly can. I mean, there's a lot of good work that's being done with sequestration. There's a lot of good work that's being done with technology. And by the way, as we deal with this stuff, it all creates jobs and it all helps move our economy forward. So, you know, Montana's a coal-producing state. Of course we're going to emit a lot of carbon based a state that doesn't have that natural resource, that doesn't have those power plants. But keep in mind that we export a fair amount of that via electricity lines to other states. I'm not disagreeing that we don't emit that kind of CO2. I'm not disagreeing that we probably couldn't do better in reducing the CO2 that's put out. But just to make that statement and say, look, you've only got a million people and look at all the pollution you're emitting, isn't really a fair statement of what's actually going on.
But you would perhaps be in favor of some limits on those carbon emissions, because that's the president's proposal.
Yeah, I think the proposal that comes out of the EPA and from the executive branch, it's going to be Look, I don't have to tell you. I mean, as a farmer, I've seen the impacts of climate change, so that's not debatable. But how those proposals come out and how they're implemented, making sure there's technology out there to be able to meet the proposals that are going to come out of the EPA is going to be critically important as we go on. I'm a firm believer that we need to address the issue of our changing climate. By the same token, we need to insert common sense as we move forward so it doesn't take away from our economy, so we can continue to create jobs. We've got such a special state because of our outdoor, because of our agriculture being the number one industry, and all these things are impacted by a changing climate, by clean air, clean water, all those kind of things. So we just need to be smart about it and move forward. And I will tell you this, Sally, and it's why I'm disappointed that Congress can't do this. I think that if we work together and work for common sense proposals, we can have the best of both worlds. We can have jobs, we can have an economy that's vibrant, we can have affordable energy, and we can have a clean environment.
The president also this week said the Keystone Pipeline should only be approved if it doesn't worsen carbon pollution. And there's debate about what that means in terms of whether he thinks the pipeline should go forward or not. You do think it means that the pipeline can be built?
I do think it means that the pipeline can be built. I think that there's assumptions made by some agencies that if that pipeline isn't built, that oil isn't going to find its way to market, and it will, and it may be by a much, maybe by rail, maybe by truck, which would be far less efficient than a pipeline. There's also some folks that feel that if that crude doesn't make it down to the refineries are going to quit refining crude, and that's incorrect because the crude's going to continue to come from countries that don't like us very much in the Middle East. So I don't think that statement has a major impact on whether the pipeline should be built or not, and I've felt that the pipeline should be built. Why? Because I'd rather do business with Canada than some of the folks we're doing business with from the Middle East, number one. And number two, until we get options to be able to get us off of fuel, petroleum fuel, until we get the options to do that, it would be hypocritical for me to say, when I use diesel and gas in my farming operation, to say, well, it can't be done. It can be done. This can be done, and we need to do it. We need to work, put research and development dollars in so we can make the transition away. But we're not even close to that at this point in time.
There are those opponents of the pipeline and others who say, look, we're never going to do what we need to do in terms of the renewable energy that you're talking about, that every time we build a new project, a new pipeline and so on, we're just fostering our dependence, that we will never wean ourselves unless we say, okay, this project will not go forward.
That's a fair point, and I understand where they're coming from. The problem is that I think we've got to be smarter, and maybe we can't. I mean, but I think we can. I think we've got to be smarter and do it in a way that's measured, in a way that we can make the transition instead of just saying, well, we're going to go cold turkey on this, and we're going to find some other energy source. If we don't find that other energy source, then that can have some pretty devastating effects on our economy and jobs.
Senator, you wrote a column this spring for USA Today where you talked about your concerns about climate change. And in that column, you said, quote, the argument isn't whether the world is changing, it's how to respond.
That is exactly correct, Sally. And I think that is a big part of this debate. And I think that the quicker that we understand that we need to respond in a measured, common sense way, that helps create jobs, helps move our economy forward, helps keep energy affordable, is critically important. I had some folks in here yesterday in my office here from ARS, and they were talking about, because of the dramatic changes in weather, how we're seeing more diseases that impact agriculture, funguses and those kind of things that we've never seen before in our history and since we've been out here. And that is just another sign to me that says, look, we're going to continue to have more and more and more problems that we can't even see yet, but they're on the horizon. And if we don't address this problem now, if we continue to wait, the problem isn't going to go away. It's just going to get worse and worse and worse. So, as the EPA comes out with those regulations, we're going to be working to try to make sure that those regulations work for a state like Montana, which is a rural state, depends on agriculture. And by the way, food security is important for every state in the union, just not Montana. But it needs to be addressed now, not later. And we need to do it with common sense proposals.
Well, I've been speaking with Senator John Tester. We've been discussing climate change. Senator, thank you so much.
Sally, thank you.
And in tonight's weather forecast for west of the Continental Divide, tonight expect mostly clear skies with lows in the mid to upper 40s. Tomorrow calls for mostly sunny skies with highs in the mid 80s to lower 90s. For central Montana, tonight will be mostly clear skies with highs in the lower with lows will be in the 50s to mid-60s. And along the Rocky Mountain front, west winds will be around 20 miles per hour with gusts of 45 in the evening. Tomorrow expect sunny skies with highs in the upper 80s. And for southwest Montana, tonight calls for mostly clear skies with lows around 50 degrees. Tomorrow expect sunny skies with highs around 85 to 90 degrees. Currently in our listening area, Helena is 84 degrees with sunny conditions. In Kalispell, it's sunny and 76 degrees. Butte has 83 degrees under fair skies. Great Falls is sunny with 87 degrees. Here in Missoula, the temperature under fair skies is 81 degrees. It's 84 and sunny in Dillon. In Hamilton, it's sunny and 85 degrees. Libby has 76 with partly cloudy conditions. And in Polson, skies are sunny and it's 78 degrees. And now for the editorial comments of Nancy Schlepp.
I am the president of the Montana Taxpayers Association, and I'd like to talk to you about some of the tax legislation that passed during this legislative session. And what better time to talk about Montana tax issues than the week before the 4th of July, when we celebrate the independence of our great nation? We all know taxes are necessary to provide the great public services we all use and appreciate. However, balance and having a system that fosters a healthy business community is also important. From that perspective, the 2013 legislative session saw moderate gains in the world of tax law for the Montana business community, thankfully accompanied by no losses. My following commentary attempts to squeeze all the tax highlights of the four-month legislative session into a few minutes. To start, are five key pieces of legislation that are now law. First is Senate Bill 96, the Business Equipment Reduction. This bill reduces taxes assessed on business equipment two different ways starting in 2014. The first way is that the first $100,000 of business equipment will be exempt from taxation. This is a very good step for all small businesses in Montana, as many will not even have to pay the business equipment tax now. And this is a change from current law, which had a threshold exemption of $20,000. And what a threshold exemption means, that is, if you made $20,001, you would have paid taxes on the entire amount. However, if you had made $20,000, you wouldn't pay any at all. So now, under the new current law, if you make $101,000, you will only pay tax on $1. The second change under this bill is that the tax rate on the first $6 million of market value will be 1.5% instead of 3%, which will continue to be for the above $6 million. Any loss of revenue to counties from this law will be backfilled by the state general fund, keeping county governments whole. Next is Senate Bill 280, which allows mediation of disputed property valuations. This bill allows a taxpayer to request and be granted mediation between the steps of going to the County Tax Appeal Board and the State Tax Appeal Board, which is known as STAB, in the pursuit of finding resolution as an alternative to going to court. This should be especially beneficial to speeding up the appeals process for large industrial companies and centrally assessed companies. Sometimes appeals in these cases have been lasting 6 to 8 years, so this really should help speed up the process. Quicker resolution, possibly through the mediation process, will help all parties involved, the businesses and the local government entities. Third is House Bill 593, which revises calculations for agriculture properties regarding soil and productivity values. This bill requires the Montana Department of Revenue to consider site-specific soil and productivity information, as well as any additional information provided by the taxpayer when determining values of agriculture land. The Agriculture Advisory Committee, which is appointed by the governor, will be tasked with evaluating this criteria and providing guidance and methods for adjusting these valuations. Fourth is House Bill 152, which provides deadlines for local governments when reviewing tax-exempt applications. This bill establishes new processes and timelines for local governments to approve or deny a property tax abatement or exemption. And these type of abatements or exemptions can be related to new or expanding industry, remodeling, reconstruction, expansion of buildings or structures, business incubators, industrial parks, and buildings and land owned by local economic development organizations. And finally, number five is Senate Bill 108, which renews the Montana Charitable Endowment Tax Credit. And now this tax credit will be renewed until 2019, which is very good for all Montana businesses wanting to help any endowment. Other tax bills that were passed were House Bill 444, which provides a tax credit for access to state lands that were previously not accessible. Senate Bill 115 provides for marriage filing separately, disclosure of information between spouses. Senate Bill 175 revises K-12 funding and the funding formula. Senate Bill 179 requires partnerships with more than 100 partners to transmit returns electronically to the Department of Revenue, which will really help them cut down on their paper. Senate Bill 239 allows creation of targeted tax increment finance districts, or TIF districts. I greatly appreciate this opportunity to visit with all of you about these important Montana tax issues. Thank you for listening, and the Montana Taxpayers Association wishes you a safe and wonderful 4th of July.
Nancy Schlepp is one of several commentators on Montana Evening Edition. The views expressed do not necessarily represent those of the station. If you have a comment, you can send it via our webpage at mtpr.org or on Montana Public Radio's Facebook page. Montana Evening Edition is also archived on our website. I'm Sarah Jovetich.
Listening, and please join us tomorrow at 7, 8, and 8:30 for Montana Morning News.